Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
We are in the midst of June. The ground is wet. Our gardens are looking green. A great time to call in and ask your gardening questions. And our concentration for the next half an hour or so, Sophie, is on the whole process behind the creation of roses.
It is, because, you know, this time of year, if you go to your local nursery or garden centre, you'll see what we call bare-rooted roses there, just as you can buy bare-rooted fruit trees and deciduous ornamental plants. So bare-rooted roses are readily available, but sometimes people don't appreciate all the work that has gone into creating a rose and all the work that's gone into not only creating a rose variety, but gone into growing that rose that you're about to buy. So I thought we should talk to rose expert Kim Cirrus.
Now, Kim, you're a very welcome addition, as always, to Talk Back Gardening. You're a rose importer, you're a garden commentator, and you did return from a Churchill Fellowship looking at rose breeding trends in the US and Europe. Was that a couple of years ago now?
Yeah. Good morning, Deb. Morning, Sophie. Yes, that was in 24, and I published my report in early 25. So yes, it still feels very very current and very real, and it is a process that I'm looking at and the industry is taking on board, which I'm very, very grateful for.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got a specific rose question, do call in on 1300 222 891, or you can text us on 0467 922 891. But I'm going to hand over to Sophie because I know she has a lot of questions for you, Kim.
Oh, yeah. Well, fire away, Sophie.
Absolutely, Kim. So starting off, you know, describe what a bare-rooted rose is and why there are so many bare-rooted roses around at the moment.
Okay. Well, traditionally roses start, and we talk about bare-root roses, roses start in a traditional sense by planting an understock, that's the root stock, in around about May or June. It's grown on in a paddock, in a field, and once the top growth has advanced, and that's normally around about sort of December, a bud from a variety is taken off that variety and grafted onto that rootstock. The top is then cut off a couple of weeks later, and then the root system of that rootstock then fires that little bud into growing, and that's how the new rose is grown. And then it stays in the field for 6 months or a 12 from between 6 and 12 months. Mm-hmm. And develops into a rose plant. That's the rose plant that we see growing, and then that plant has to be taken from the fields and then into, in winter case, a bag. And mm-hmm. then into a garden centre. So it's really a transplant system. So all those roses that are sitting in that field at this around about sort of May and June, a tractor with a big cutter, a big metal cutter, goes underneath them and shakes those roses. So it cuts off a fair bit of the root system. The roses are then collected, taken to sheds, and the top growth is trimmed back and into the you know, two or three sticks with the roots accordingly trimmed back as well. And so you've got the roots, a little shank, and then you've got the little kink, which is where the bud has grown from the rootstock. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a couple of little shoots there, nice big canes, and then put in bag, and then it goes to the garden centre. At this time of year, we have a huge selection. Most wholesale growers will have a catalogue of anywhere between 250 and 600 varieties that are grown out in those fields. So it is by far and away the best way. If you are looking for a specific variety, winter is your top time to do that, because after that, and after everything's been sold, there are some roses that are then put in pots, but you don't get the same selection as you do in wintertime.
And so basically the rose you're buying now is probably 2 years in the making, you know, mm-hmm. 2 years of growing on, because people yep. don't understand the work that goes into plants, and that's 2 years of nurturing by the rose grower. Now, mm-hmm. let's just talk about bare roots first. So they come wrapped in a media which is usually sawdust-based. It's really yes. important that doesn't go in the hole, isn't
You're
it?
You're right. No, it's just there to hold a bit of moisture, but because it's not broken down, if you do put it in the hole, all it's going to do is want to break down, and it'll just simply take nitrogen out of that particular area, and that really affects your rose. So if you're going to have that sawdust, put it in your compost, put it in your green waste, or just simply spread it over the garden. I mean, it'll disappear very, very quickly, but just not in the planting hole. And really, the planting hole just needs to be a good size hole. And I know if you go to all your books and you'll see when you put your rose in, you've got a mound, put a mound on. I'm sort of starting, my chest just started to tighten up. I mean, all the stuff that, you know, that really, really scares people about bare root roses is it's a matter of dig a hole big enough to take that root system, and where the kink is on that stem, just get it as low to the ground as possible and then backfill. And if you want to, Sophie, you always talk about the importance of getting the ground right. It's the same with bare root roses. Add a bit of organic matter, you know, well-aged compost. If you are using an organic, and I know I'm on the ABC, I can't mention brands, but, you know, it's a matter of using something that's well-aged and an organic fertiliser of sort of base fertiliser. Mix that in. Just avoid grabbing chemical fertilizers and throwing that in the bottom of the hole, because that's one thing you can guarantee is going to burn new roots and set your plant back. So go organic all the way. And really, it's a pretty simple thing. Dig the hole as big as if bigger than that root system. You know, put the bare root rose in. Make sure the kink is as close to the ground as possible. That means the roots are as deep as possible. And if you can create a little well around that planting hole would be great. And then the tip that I will say, cut whatever growth there is back by about half. So okay. I know it's really hard because you go, well, I paid for the whole thing. I mean, why am I cutting it back in half? I mean, yeah. But what that does, it encourages the base shoots, the base buds around where the graft is to really generate some good water shoots and a great framework. By just simply cutting that stem back by half, you will create a much better and better quality sort of structure to your plant.
Yeah. So really, Kim, I mean, roses are incredibly tough. If you've done a bit of soil prep, you can bung them in, right, and they will thrive. But one thing we haven't talked about is the position. Now, roses are sun lovers and don't necessarily like root competition from large trees or gums. Yes. How much sun? You know, I love it when people always push the envelope and they go, it doesn't get all day sun. But, you know, what's the minimum amount of sun a rose needs?
Oh, look, I would say, look, six hours for me. If you want flowers, you've got to have sun. And so, but there are some varieties. Look, I've seen iceberg grow in places where there's only 2 or 3 hours sunlight, and it still looks okay. There is a variety called Shady Lady, aptly named, because with about 4 hours sun, it still produces a reasonable batch of flowers. But if you want healthy, long flowering, everything that to what these plants have been bred for, if you give it the optimum full sun or as much as you can, at least a minimum of 6 hours, you're going to get the best out of those roses. And when we're talking roses, we're talking new breeds. I mean, really, from anything the last 20 years, the world breeders have really sort of stepped up in terms of disease resistance, incredible flowering capacity, everything everybody wants in a rose. That's what you're going to get. But if you give it that optimum opportunity to grow with sun, and sun is the only thing that we can't sort of manufacture, then I think you're in the best place. And if you are in a place where you don't get a lot of sun, look to put into a reasonable sized pot that gets put at least three bags of potting mix in. That takes about three bags, and position your rose in a pot so it gets the sun, or a couple in there. Yeah.
Now, I know we've got callers that want to talk to you, but there's just one more thing I want to cover off on. So you've just talked about rose breeders. So from when someone, you know, starts to breed a rose, it's actually years in the development of a new rose, isn't it? So can you just run us through that briefly?
Yeah. So look, from that first crossing, the pollen going onto the flower and then the hip develops, and from that hip there are seeds in those hips. Those seeds are then planted into little pots, and this is at the breeders all around the world. Most professional breeders will plant out around 150 to 250,000 seedlings. That's new rose. Every seed is a new rose variety. They plant out 150 to 250,000 each year, and subsequent years, although that sort of class of rose every year gets cut, gets culled, until after about 6 or 7 years, you're left with about maybe 1,000 that they will do their final selection from. Then it gets down to 100, until really after about 8 or 9 years, you're left with about 3 or 4 varieties.
Wow, that's whittling down from that number.
It's whittling down, yeah. And I mean, look, I mean, nobody thinks their kid's ugly, but when you're a rose breeder, you've just got to keep culling them. And you just, I mean, you can't just keep saying, oh, this is a good one. It's really quite brutal. But the benefit is, and the benefit to the home gardener, we get the best of the best.
Yeah, well, you took the words out of my mouth when you said brutal, because I'm sure there are some beautiful varieties. Look, we've got some questions coming in for you for Kim Cirrus, who is SA Rosarian, Churchill Fellow, Rose Importer and Garden Commentator, joining Sophie Thompson in Talkback Gardening this morning. If you have a rose question, please call in on 1300 222 891.
Welcome to Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We are talking roses this morning with Kim Cirrus, a Rosarian, Churchill Fellow, Rose Importer, Garden Commentator, joining Sophie Thompson here on Saturday Talkback Gardening. And Maha has called in from Happy Valley with a couple of questions. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone, and I appreciate the amount of work that goes into breeding, especially in a vegetatively propagated crop like rose, and it's gone a long way. Now, most of the roses nowadays are beautiful, colourful, and pest and disease resistant, etc., but why is fragrance ignored as one of the breeding objectives in roses?
Oh, Maha, that's a really good question. That's a question that often, where has the fragrance gone in roses? And I can guarantee you it's gone nowhere. It's there. And if not that you can go out in winter and smell those roses, but if you do look at those new rose varieties coming through, a good portion of those will have rose fragrance. The only difficulty in breeding with fragrance is that fragrance often, whilst you increase the fragrance, you often decrease the disease and pest and disease resistance of a rose. And getting that balance right is the skill of the rose breeder. And I've been lucky enough to, as Deb said, to go around the world, have a look at roses. And I've seen new varieties coming through, and the fragrance on those it's intoxicating. So I can guarantee you there are plenty of new rose varieties coming out with great fragrances, as there have been for generations of roses. And even in the last classes of last couple of years, you will find incredibly highly fragrant roses. There was one rose called Sub-Zero, which came out a couple of years ago, Pope John Paul. Really super fragrant roses.
I'm with you, Maha. I love fragrance. That's a huge part of why I choose a rose. Yes. But you've got another question as well.
Yes, please. Where can I find Rosa centifolia in South Australia? I love it, and we use it for various preparations at home.
Look, anything in that sort of from a species type rose, we're starting to see less and less of those available as a commercially in a garden centre. But that's more a specialised thing. So I would always say head online to a specialist rose nursery that will do a mail order. So and this is the perfect time to do it. Have a look through there. I would just search through Rosa centifolia and then find the grower that's doing it, because trying to for me to tell you where to go to buy that is going to be really difficult. So
Can I add the Heritage Roses, South Australia? So if you contact them, they're a group of passionate rosarians, and often they will be able to head you in the right direction. When I was doing, when we were doing stuff on KI, they were very generous in donating some of those very old-fashioned roses that you can't find commercially to the recovery efforts.
Lovely.
That's right, Sophie. Yep, indeed.
I love it, Mr. Lincoln.
And look, from a historical background, it's important to see where we've come from. It is wonderful to see those old roses still kept alive, even though the modern rose has sort of like outstripped those in terms of flowering and everything else. But it's just nice to have something with that, that history.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for the call, Maha. Two excellent questions from you. On the text line, I have a rose question. I would like to dig up some rose bushes from my mother-in-law's house and plant them in my garden. Is now a good time to do this? And what should I do? Asks Marie from Balhanna.
Well, you're doing exactly, Marie would do exactly what rose growers are doing in their paddocks. All these roses are growing and they're doing exactly that. They're cutting in Marie's case would be cut the rose back by at least 3/4 because you've got to balance what you take at the top is what you're going to take from the bottom. And roses are really hard to retain all its root system. So, just dig it up. You won't get all the root system, but as much roots as you possibly can. But if you can balance it by taking at least 3/4 of the growth off, so you're giving it a really heavy prune, plus it's easier to do the pruning first. It'll be easier then to manoeuvre the plant out. So dig it up, knock off all the soil, and just have your new hole or the pot prepared, plant it in, and then just go through the process of just watering in. If you're going into a pot, just a premium potting mix. If you're going into the ground, what we did before with a bit of organic matter mixed in, they're a really simple plant. And I've transplanted plants on 40-degree days in summer and haven't lost anything. So but winter is a perfect time because the plant's in that dormant stage.
Okay, well, I mean, I know that you can set yourself up against the rest of us, Kim. You've got a lot of experience with roses where you might not have lost one. I don't know that we've got quite your touch, but...
dig three and hope one will live. You'll be fine.
Shah from Kangaroo Island is on the line. Now, Shah, you were given a gift of a rose.
Yeah, this is one that was actually given to my mum years ago, and it was given to her in one of those gorgeous decorative concrete pots, which is about 45 or 50 centimetres. And I think it's what they call a cluster rose. It's not actually a miniature. It's kind of between that and one of your larger roses. And what has actually happened over the years, it's sitting on Bay of Biscay soil in the garden. And over the years, the soil has kind of eroded away a little bit. So there's the graft is actually exposed, but it's never actually grown runners or anything out of it, or suckers, but it has grown through the bottom of the pot. And I don't know whether I could try to move it or just fill it up with soil or what to do, because I don't want to lose it.
Okay. And roses, well, any plant does want to expand itself out of a pot, and it is quite common to see a rose. And often if a rose sort of send one little root out of the bottom and then off it goes, it's in the ground. Yep. You can move it. You can move it now, and what you'll do is essentially you'll be cutting off a heck of a lot of root system, so you will need to prune that rose back at the top by about that sort of well over half. If Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking if you want to move it, now is definitely the time to do it, because if you do it in spring, all that new growth is just going to simply wither and wilt. So, by cutting that root, so there's a lot of root system in that has gone out of the pot, and it is in the grounds. So I would be mindful, tip the pot, cut the roots, cut that root. But definitely cut the top growth back by half to three quarters.
Okay, and then in terms of replanting it, that exposed graft, which is actually it's all scarred over. It doesn't look like there's any chance of it growing out. But should that stay above the ground as it is, or am I going to mess it up?
If the graft is above, everything grows from the graft. So if you're meaning that it's the shank and then the graft, that if you can add a little bit of extra a potting mix to the top of that that pot, if it has subsided a bit, that would be a benefit too.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. Yep. Really appreciate Pleasure. It.
Thanks, okay. Shah, for being a part of Talkback Gardening. Great to hear from you on KI. Now, just on the text line, a few other questions. This texter asks, what is causing dieback now? Is it just too wet?
Yeah, look, it could be a range of things, but more is that it's probably new water shoots that have been shot up, because it's been pretty warm. So plants have actually continued to grow, and if a plant continues to grow and it hasn't sort of hardened off enough, if we get a bit of a cold spell, then all that sort of fleshy growth tends to sort of die back a little bit, and so that's part of it. The other can be that, yes, if you're in a very wet, boggy area, you will get some die back through. Mm. But there are some varieties too that just tend to sort of have a lot of dead wood in them, and that's why pruning's there, because come your pruning time, it's partly is reducing the height, but it's also taking out anything dead or damaged. So that's the time to do it. And I will say now, if we could please spray our secateurs with with either a bit of bleach or a little bit of methylated spirits of 50% or so water to methylated spirits, it reduces the amount of it increases your hygiene, and it reduces the amount of risk that you've got from transferring disease from one plant to another. And that's one thing I learned over in the United States. They are just fastidious about the hygiene when it comes to pruning their roses. So I think that's, and I must admit I haven't been as fastidious before, but I certainly am now. So I keep a little spray bottle with 50% methylated spirits, 50% water, and I just give the the secateurs a quick spray between plants, and I'm hoping that's going to make a difference in terms of transferring disease, and it's something that maybe we can all think about.
Yeah, well, it certainly makes sense, Kim. Now, you can't see this picture, but Anne of Morfitt Vale has sent through a picture of a very leggy, about a 4-foot, 35-year-old rose. It's become very woody and asks, how much can I prune back? And as you said, like a lot of the roses, still got a lot of leaves on it at the moment.
Yeah, I'm currently in Cowell, and I went to the cemetery, and this is sort of associated with this. I've been pruning roses in the cemetery at Cowell, and I think even some of the intern residents were turning in their graves when I brought out the chainsaw and the head shears. But you had to be a bit brutal with that. But and these hadn't been pruned for 3 years, so I left them looking, well, it looked okay. But when it comes to sort of leggy stuff, the legginess can be that it's not getting enough sunlight. So that's what happens if you don't have enough sun for your rose. It just tends to sort of grow up a little bit and get leggy. When you are looking at pruning, half the height, half the number of canes, and don't be afraid to sort of cut out anything that's that is a little bit gnarly, or as long as it's reasonably shaped. That's it for me. I think pruning is one of the things that really stops people in their tracks, either from planting roses or knowing what to do with roses in winter. And if I can say one thing, it is don't worry about a 45 degree angle at an outward facing bud, which is what everyone tries to do. I mean, if you're looking at the purist in terms of pruning, just cut wherever you can. Make sure your secateurs are sharp. And as long as it looks like a pruned rose, it's a pruned rose. No two people prune the same. Even when I was pruning, you know, in Cowell, and it's lovely to see casual water lying around. I've never seen so many people smiling, seeing, you know, with all the rain we've had here. But, you know, you could hear people going, "Oh, I wouldn't have cut that." I'm sort of chopping in, but, you know, I always say have a go at pruning, and yeah, don't overthink it.
Kim Cyrus, of course, we've got the Rose Trial Gardens in the Adelaide Botanic Gardens where people can go and have a look. But any suggestions for some new releases to keep an eye out for?
Okay, there's one, a couple there. There's a low Floribunda, really fragrant, which is unusual in Floribundas. They're cluster flowers. One called Pearlescent. It's a white with a bit of blush as things get colder. So in the autumn, it goes a bit blush. Enrico Caruso, which is a hybrid tea. It's a bright pink, highly, highly fragrant. That's one to keep an eye out for. There's an Australian bred one called Ginger Treats, and it was bred by the late Bruce Brundrett, named after his favourite sweet treat. Ginger treats, and that's sort of a ginger with a bit of caramel and mustard in it. So, and that's tinged with crimson. And Kew Gardens is a David Austin rose, a new one, which they're single, so it's about five petals and with white with a bit of lemon in it as well. So, but there's stacks of new rose varieties and there's stacks of lovely roses that, but
and stacks of information from you, Kim. Thank you so much. SA Rosarian Churchill Fellow, love your work. Thanks for joining us in Talk Back Gardening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
We have got Sophie Thompson here, ready, willing and able to take your calls on 1300 222 891. I have a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away, one by phone and one by text. If you'd like to get ready for that, put your full name and postal address on your text, but don't send it yet. Right now, call in 1300 222 891. If you'd like to text your comment, we'd love to receive them on 0467 922 891. We have been talking this morning to Kim Cyrus, SA Rosarian, about the creation of new roses and how to look after your roses. And Cherie from Hallett Cove is picking up on that topic with bare-rooted roses. Good morning, Cherie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was listening to what Kim was saying, and we're about to receive a couple of climbing bare-rooted roses from the southeast, which we're putting in some pots.
Awesome.
Just wondering whether we use the rose, camellia and gardenia mix that's available. He did say a premium potting mix and I'm just not sure. So I was just wanting some advice on that, please.
Okay. So I wouldn't bother buying a specific potting media for roses. I would just use a good quality potting media. And to that, I would then look at feeding regularly an organic-based rose fertilizer. So when, you know, a premium potting mix is all that many nurseries use to pot on their bare-rooted roses at the end of the season, and then they're sold to customers. So a premium potting mix will work fine. Often some of those specialized potting media, I think they're a bit more expensive and not necessary. So apologies to any producers of them, but just a good quality premium potting media will be fantastic and a decent sized pot. So if you're going to keep the roses in that pot long term, as Kim said, you want to have a pot that contains at least three bags of potting media. So that's not just a small 20 centimetre pot or even a 30 centimetre pot. If it's going to be a long-term home for the roses, the bigger the better. If it's just going to be because, for example, your garden's not quite ready to plant and you need to pot the bare-rooted roses up for a couple of months, that could be a 20 centimetre pot. And actually, most bare-rooted roses that are potted on by the nursery are grown on in a 20 centimetre pot.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
So I hope appreciate that all makes that. Sense. Yeah. So,
it does.
So
thank you. We've just worked out ours will be five bags of potting mix.
Perfect.
Which is great.
Okay. So. Gorgeous. And what roses have you got coming?
It's a climbing one from down the southeast, and it's lavender colour. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it should be lovely.
Wow.
Okay, they good grow good roses down the southeast.
Amazing. We're looking forward to it.
Enjoy them, Cherie. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. 1-300-222-891 is what Beverly from Hayborough has called in on with a worm question. Hi, Beverly.
I have a new garden in Hayborough. And I rang Sophie 6 months or so ago saying I've got no worms. And Sophie, amazing advice. Yes, they did come.
Oh, how exciting.
They're being very problematic. At night, if it rains, the worms are coming out of the garden and onto my alfresco. And when I come out in the morning, it's like the killing fields. There's dozens of dead worms. Is there something in the soil?
I actually saw them in my laundry climbing up the walls the other night, and I thought that's because the soil is saturated. So, you know, I'm sure there are still lots more worms in there, but if your soil is a bit on the heavy side and, you know, it's probably already wet, now on, if we get more rain, the worms will just want to come up because it's getting a bit too wet for them. So, I'm sure you've got millions more, although it is an awful sight. I actually looked on the floor and saw these dead worms, and you sort of feel heartbroken
it's
for them because, you know, you try so hard to get them. But anyway, it's great to hear that the worms came and they're just escaping the soggy soil.
Oh, yeah, I've got clay under the good soil I put in, so that's probably what it is. So, thank you. Unfortunately, it's not what I wanted to hear, but thank you so much. And you have a lovely weekend, ladies.
Thank you.
You too.
Yeah, same to you, Beverly. Thank you. Mari is in Lamoureux with a rose question. Hello, Mari.
Hello. I've got a golden bunny rose. It's just starting. It hasn't got many flowers coming on it, but there's hardly any green leaves on it. And I don't want to lose it, so I just wondered if there's any way I can bring it back to what it used to be.
Yeah. So it shouldn't be flowering at all at the moment. So that's a bit out of cycle. It probably just, you know, because we did have some warmer weather, the fact that it's got not much leaves is because it's cold and the roses should be dormant at the moment. So at the moment, theoretically, you know, once we get to July is pruning time. So even though it's got a couple of flowers left on it, once you prune that rose, I'd be picking those flowers and enjoying them in a vase inside. And how old is it, Murray?
Oh, years old. I can't remember how old it is. It has to be 30, 40 years old.
Okay. Well, so July is the time to be pruning them. And with climbers, what we're trying to do, I mean, roses only flower on new growth. So we are trying to give them a sort of a prune so we keep getting new growth and we keep getting lots of flowers. So the fact that it's got flowers at the moment is out of season, and really the plant should be dormant and not have leaves on it, which is what you say it's got. So I'd be looking to prune it in wintertime, and when you go to prune roses in wintertime, there are a couple of flowers left and there are also a couple of hips. So I always pick those hips and put them in a vase inside and enjoy those flowers inside too.
Okay, thanks very much for your help.
All the best, Mari.
Thanks, Mari. And bye-bye. Thank you to Debbie, who sent through some beautiful pictures. Says, I'm very proud of my roses. They are very old and just a couple of vases filled with the most delicate and beautiful flowers you can possibly imagine. Absolutely gorgeous, and I can imagine the fragrance from them as well, Debbie. Thank you very much for sharing those. Rick from Prospect is on the line. Rick, you've got a suggestion for our question on the glory vines.
Yes, hi Deb, hi Sav. The lady that was having a delay in the construction of her pergola.
That was Rachel,
Rachel. I can probably save her a few months. I don't know when it's going to be completed, but I've planted in my lifetime probably a couple of 100,000 vines.
Yep.
In the last decade or so, a trick I used to use was lift them in winter, wrap them in the thickest plastic. And this was done commercially, obviously, but you might be able to do it in an outside fridge. Wrap them in the thickest plastic you can find. You may have to trim the top a little bit to fit them in. And then, say, late November, early December, pull them out, trim the roots to about a 15-centimetre radius, mm-hmm. prune the top to a two-bud spur, soak them in water for perhaps a day just to acclimatise back to room temperature, and then plant them out in nice warm soil, and they go like stink.
Fantastic, yeah. Because that's very similar to if orchardists too have bare-rooted trees that they don't get in the ground, you know, by the end of winter, they put them in cool rooms and plant them out when they can. So great advice for Rachel. If she knows that, you know, the pergola will be ready to go and she's got an outside drinks fridge, nothing like a few plants in your fridge, I think that's a fabulous idea. Thank you, Rick.
That's okay. Bye.
Thanks for calling in, Rick. Just on the earthworm scenario, Jane in Burnside says, the earthworms escaping the soil in wet weather. Sometimes I find them on my patio and many are still alive, so I gently scoop them up and put them back on the less soggy soil. They seem to survive from there. And this texter makes note that, of course, the birds are getting a very easy meal with all the worms on top of the wet ground at the moment. Thank you for that. Mandy is in Clare. Mandy, you've got a very large lime tree. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's a huge lime. The leaves, the new growth, is curling up on all of the leaves that are on the lime tree. We don't know what's wrong with it.
Okay. So can I ask, when you look at those leaves, are there little wiggly lines in them?
No. Like, I must say I haven't. I haven't looked at that, Sophie.
Okay,
I didn't notice that.
Okay, there's something called citrus leaf miner, which it lays its the larvae in the leaf, and it sort of burrows within the leaf tissue, and it causes wiggly lines. It can also cause the leaves to roll and curl.
Okay.
So it could be that. What I'd suggest, if you're up at Clare, is just take a sample of the foliage along to the local nursery or garden centre. There's great staff that work there. And ask them what it is.
I already have. And,
and they didn't know?
They didn't know. They looked it up. But I will again. I'll take that sample.
Yeah.
Boots right now.
Citrus leaf miner can cause some rolling of the leaves. It can also be the plant's hungry or cold. Is the other leaves healthy and green?
Yes, they're dark. They're a bit motley, actually, the darker green ones.
Okay. So I would actually be looking at, you know, fixing the nutrition of the tree, and you may well find that helps a bit too.
Okay, so nutrition of the tree. So looking at some fertilizer at this moment.
Yeah, organic based fertilizer, not necessarily. Well, from now on, the tree won't metabolize it now, so I don't think you're going to see any solution to this till it starts to warm up. But you know, applying an organic based fertilizer suitable for citrus. You know, Ian Tolley's a big fan of feed your citrus a little bit once a month, and that's providing the smorgasbord, and they take what they want when they want it. At this time of year, it's so cold, particularly where you are, that it's probably not going to correct itself. But if it can fix the nutritional reasons the leaves are going motley, can you see those squiggly lines?
Yeah, I found some. Yes, I never noticed that before.
Okay, so then that might just be citrus leaf miner. It's a cosmetic issue, right? So ultimately, your tree is fine. I would still correct the nutrition because, you know, we want it to be fantastic. It's not. I should go back. You can treat that. So you basically spray your citrus with a horticultural oil, which stops the next generation of citrus leaf miner laying their larvae in those leaves. But ultimately, it's not going to kill your tree. That's the important thing, right? It's purely so good feed and Google citrus leaf miner and using a horticultural oil.
Thank you very much. The other question, if I may ask something, is... before I left my property in Harndorf, I asked you if I could chop down potted olive trees that they were standards and they were looking lame. So I asked you and you said, yes, you could do that. And so I did that And then when I was getting new growth on the stems of the potted, and the removalist used it as a pole to basically move the pots, and so knocked off all of the
oh my new gosh. Growth.
So there's nothing; they're just black, and there's I've scratched the bark, and it doesn't appear to have any green as yet. Should I be worried? Okay.
Oh, I don't know what to say. You know, just give it time. See what happens in springtime. So see if they start to put new growth on. But ultimately, if those trunks are brown, that's not sounding good.
Not a great sign. Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Mandy, for the call. If you've not won anything from the ABC in the last month and you would like to win an ABC gardening magazine, we've got one to give away by phone on 1300 222 891. Emma is ready to take your call. And one, if you're listening on digital, there's a bit of a delay, you'd like to win one on the text line, please put your full name and postal address, and you can send that through to 0467 922 891.
You're with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. Talk Back Gardening.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia, and Broken Hill.
Let's go to Boolaroo Centre. Peter, good morning to you.
Morning, Deb.
Now, you were given some horse manure.
That's right, I was given some. It didn't cost me a thing, so I'm presuming it must have come from a gift horse. But
I never look it in the mouth.
Well, I know it didn't come out of its mouth where I got it from, at the other end of the horse. But anyway, I was just wondering, like 6 weeks ago I got it, and it's been sitting in a pile, and we've had quite a bit of rain. Like, we had 13 mils of rain last night, 35 for the last 4 days. So I'm just wondering, when does fresh manure be called? How long does it wait before you can say it's aged manure to spread around the garden?
So usually you'd say 3 months for horse manure, and, you know, possibly chicken manure, which is what we call a hot manure, you'd wait longer, you'd wait closer to 6 months. Now, if the manure was already old when you got it, you might already have those 3 months. The problem with when it's too young, it can, some of the urine in it can cause a bit of burn, right? So it can, well, it can have high levels of ammonia, and that can cause a bit of burning. So if you can hold off before you use it, or put it somewhere where you're prepping. So let's say you're prepping for your, you know, summer crops, which are going to go in 3 months. You could certainly put that on that soil and just let it work in there. But yeah, usually I'd say 3 months. Having said that, I'm going to say for everything we say, there's always someone that, you know, has done it differently. Over the years, I've known people that have used manures fresh, but they've been farmers and they've been used to it, and they've just known how much they can get away with. So, you know, I would be cautious and give it 3 months.
I know there's some talk about, like, how the horses get wormed, like, and that can affect the earthworms. But I was digging around it the other day, and there's still earthworms underneath it. So,
yeah, see, that's the thing. And also, I think we're moving towards understanding that we don't overworm our animals, because we're wanting dung beetles to be involved in the system. And so if you overworm, you don't have dung beetles. So I think, if anything, we're getting better on worming. So, but I still would wait 3 months if you can, Peter. But, you know, the temptation is when you've got some manure, it's like, you know, it's like garden gold. You get so excited. Only gardeners get excited about that stuff.
That's great, though. Thanks, Peter. Good luck with it. See you later.
Thanks, Sophie. Bye.
And our magazine winners are Jill from Pasadena and Christine from Port Augusta. And thank you very much to Kath, who says, thanks for the lovely surprise of receiving the ABC Garden magazine. I enjoyed all the articles, especially the one about Sophie and her new and establishing garden. It was a great read this week during the wintry weather. Thanks, Kath, and I hope that everyone that wins them does enjoy receiving them. Margot is in Mitcham. Margot, you've got an apple tree. Has it really got woolly aphids?
Oh, yes, it certainly has. Good morning. It's a well-established apple tree. It's Pink Lady. I've actually had woolly aphids there for a couple of years, and I've been working very hard on them, but I've just taken the net off and harvested the last of my fruit, and it's all over again. I've used pest oil and Econeem, like, alternately. I've raked the bottom, like, leaves, and sprayed the ground over winter. I'm just wondering, is there anything new or different that's around that I can do to continue this problem. It is under a tree. It is in part shade, which that's right. Lush.
Yeah, and the reality is that the newer trees are resistant to woolly aphids, right. Whereas if it's an older tree, some rootstocks get woolly aphids. So what you've been doing is right. I mean, I've heard of people doing other things like getting methylated spirits and a paintbrush, and dabbing it on the up and down the trunk. But you know, ideally I would even combine Eco Neem and Eco Oil together. You can put them together and spraying that on. You could try, I don't know about this, but, you know, diatomaceous earth, which is a fossilized microplankton, is an abrasive. So if you dusted it on the woolly aphids, my feeling is it's going to kill them. And they spray that on trees, right? They use it for controlling elm leaf beetle and all sorts of things. Diatomaceous earth. So it comes as a dust. It depends where the woolly aphids are. If they're only mainly on the trunk, say 6 foot and down, and you can readily access them, that would be worth doing. If they're all over a bigger tree, that's not going to be easy to do.
They're all over the
a bigger tree.
We keep a tree to a couple of metres, but it's...
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I don't know that there's anything new as yet. Once you start looking at systemic things, they're a lot more toxic, and I particularly wouldn't want to be doing that. You know, keeping your tree in optimal health so it can survive in spite of the aphids would be my number one goal.
And I've planted ruby saltbush near it to bring in,
bring in beneficials. Bugs. Yep.
Okay.
All of that is fantastic. You know, if you can put one of the Atroplex species in as well, that would be great. So Atroplex there's a type of saltbush called Semibacata, which is a ground cover, another one called Rigodia spinescens. They also bring lots of ladybirds in. So ultimately tree health, bringing in the beneficials, and I don't know anything else unfortunately.
I think that sounds great, Margot. So good luck with that. And we can just squeeze Sandra from Glenside in. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning. I have a gold bunny, Floribunda. Unfortunately, I planted about 2 years ago, and I think I planted it where I took out a previous rose about 2 years before that. Mm-hmm. It's hardly grown at all. I've never had a flower on it. It has hardly moved. I don't know whether I should dig it up, put it in a pot. I can't plant it anywhere else because there's nowhere else I get any bit of sunshine.
So sunshine was the first thing I was going to say. The second thing is there root competition from large trees?
Nothing around. Yes, no. There's nothing around it. No.
Okay, so what I'd do, I'd give it a stay of execution. Give it another year to perform. So get some of the soil microbial stimulants and some organic rose fertilizer and really feed it well, maybe even every couple of months with the organic rose fertilizer. Treat the soil with the microbial soil stimulants and see what happens. I wouldn't be thinking it's a problem. If there was 2 years between when roses were there and you replanted, the soil should have been fine. So just see what's going on. Give it, feed it well for a year and see what it does for you, Sandra.
Good luck, Sandra, and thank you for all of your calls and texts this morning. It's been a very busy morning. Sophie Thompson, I hope you have very good luck with your gardening and planting event at Shingleback Farm today.
I certainly will. I'm looking out at blue skies, so that's the best luck we can have.
Well, I look forward to catching up with you next weekend.
Look forward to it. Happy gardening to all our listeners.